to VBAC Birth Stories, a podcast where Australians share their journey to a vaginal birth after cesarean.
We are a safe haven for women to share their own VBAC journeys and through these personal experiences, educate and empower listeners.
I'm your host, Mel.
And I'm your host, Steph. And this is VBAC Birth Stories.
Hi everyone, today Steph and I chat to Jessica, who lives with her husband and two children in Torquay at the start of the beautiful Great Ocean Road in Victoria. Jess reflects how she made the decision to not make a birth plan for her first birth and just go with the flow. But knowing what she knows now, she wished she had prepared herself a bit better. It's a sentiment that rings true for many of us. Her first birth ended in an emergency cesarean following an induction at 40 weeks for high blood pressure readings. For her second birth, she knew she wanted to do things differently and hired a doula to support her in a private hospital setting and this time made a birth plan. However, things didn't quite go to plan. With the emergence of COVID-19 during her pregnancy, this meant that her doula was no longer able to support her in labor while in hospital. Jessica's story is a great example of how birth can still be an empowering and positive experience, even if your birth goes in a different direction to what you had intended it to. Steph and I want to thank you, Jessica, for sharing your journey with us and for reassuring mothers giving birth at this time. We hope you all enjoy this episode of VBAC Birth Stories.
Hi, Jess. Did you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from and your children?
So I'm in Torquay, in Victoria, at the start of the Great Ocean Road. My husband and I own our own business. It's a food truck business. 2.5-year-old boy called Billy. He was my cesarean baby and we just had a little girl, Harper, back in July. A VBAC baby.
Did you want to take us back to before you fell pregnant with your son and what ideas you had about birth, what your first pregnancy was like, any preconceived ideas about cesareans versus natural birth or anything like that?
I have to say I didn't really have much of an idea at all. I was kind of the first one out of my friends sort of my age to start having babies, and I'm the oldest in my family as well, so I didn't have any sisters or anything having babies. I guess most of my ideas probably came from my mum's stories, and she had quite difficult births with all of us kids, and mine actually ended in emergency Caesar with her as well, so I kind of had that at the back of my mind. My pregnancy was pretty similar to my mum's pregnancy, so I was a bit worried that it would end the same way as well. I remember making the decision to not make a birth plan and just go with the flow because I just didn't know what to expect. But I really wish now that I had done more research and prepared myself a bit better, knowing now, you know, what I wish I knew then.
What was your pregnancy like with Billy?
It was pretty uneventful. I didn't have any major issues or anything, but I was really uncomfortable. I had really bad heartburn, really bad fluid. I was just blown up like a balloon, and I was pregnant right through summer as well. So it was really tricky, really uncomfortable. But health-wise, yeah, no issues. I actually went for my 40-week appointment, and that's when they discovered I had high blood pressure. So that was the first kind of hiccup that I came across for the whole pregnancy. And even then, after they discovered the high BP, I didn't have any protein in my urine or anything. So
okay.
I think it was more almost preeclampsia, but not quite.
And yeah. Did they do subsequent readings that showed it was consistently high in that period?
Yeah. So I went for my 40-week appointment. It was about lunchtime. And the blood pressure was high, so I had to hang around to see a doctor. I was on my own. My husband was working, and I actually didn't get to see the doctor till about 8 o'clock that night, so I'd had nothing to eat all day. It was just awful. And then the doctor finally came and said I had to stay overnight, so eventually my husband got there and brought me some Macca's for dinner. And yeah, we stayed in overnight and had a vaginal exam. My cervix was really, really high, so they had to try and walk it forward. It was just really traumatizing and painful. Just everything was really unfavorable. So they decided to book me in for an induction on the Monday morning. This was a Friday that all of this was happening. So yeah, I was kind of excited. I was really over being pregnant. I was excited to meet my baby, and I hadn't really researched the risks of induction or, you know, the cascade of interventions that can come after that. So
How did they present that option of induction to you? How was it presented to you?
It was basically, you know, this blood pressure, it's quite high. You're 40 weeks anyway. We may as well just book you in for an induction. And I was like, yeah, okay, sounds good.
Just interesting, Jess. I picked up that you said that your cervix and everything is sort of unfavorable. Is that what came from the doctors? Did they say that it's unfavorable for induction?
No, they never said it was unfavorable for induction. There was no dilation. It was really high. You know, it just seemed like labor wasn't imminent, but they never said that that would affect my chances of a successful induction, which now I know if you're already that unfavorable, induction's probably not that likely to be successful.
But that wasn't communicated to you.
No, I didn't. I really didn't know that inductions could even fail. I sort of thought, you know, we'd be meeting our baby. New Year's Day was the Monday. So we thought we were going to have a New Year's Day baby. And, you know, I just thought we had that set date and the baby was coming then and that was it.
Talk us through what happened then when you were induced.
We actually got to go home for a night over the weekend to get organized. My blood pressure was still all over the place. I remember just lying on the couch with a headache. I really don't think they should have let me go home, but yeah, I was glad they did at the time. So then the Sunday night we went back and they put the Cervidil in, and I was staying at this point. It was a 4-bed room, which really sucked. You know, you're going in for an induction at 6 a.m., but you can't get any sleep. You've got women with TVs on and talking on the phone, and another teenage girl was in there crying because they kicked her boyfriend out. So it was a really tough night. Didn't get much sleep, but also excited because I thought I was meeting my baby the next morning. So yeah, 6 o'clock rolled around and they took me down and I hadn't dilated at all. Nothing had happened. So they said they would have to put the balloon in, which would be that night. So it was another whole day of kind of just hanging around. Then they put the balloon in the Sunday night. Monday morning came around and I really still hadn't dilated very much. But it was just enough that they managed to get my waters broken. And then they got me started on the drip. Yeah, my contractions just started coming on really hard and really fast, which is quite typical of an induction, I think. I wasn't really getting a gap in between them. So I requested an epidural. The whole day I didn't really progress at all. And then that night they started getting a bit concerned about my obs and said they wanted to take me for an emergency Caesar.
What were your obs at that point in time? And how
was
your blood
pressure? That's what I can't really remember. I remember it was, they weren't concerned about the baby, they were concerned about me. So yeah, I can't remember specifics.
What was your response when they suggested that would be a possibility?
I was disappointed, but I was not surprised. I'd been saying to my husband all day, this is going to end in a Caesar, because I just could tell, you know, my body wasn't progressing and I just knew that it wasn't happening.
They were suggesting an emergency Caesar at this point. Did you agree straight away or did you give yourself a little bit more time? What happened after that?
No, I agreed straight away. I kind of trusted them. And like I said, I knew that it wasn't happening, that things weren't progressing. And by that point I was ready to meet my baby. And yeah, it had been a long few days, really, a couple of nights in that 4-bed dorm. And I trusted that they, when they said that I needed it. So yeah, they just took me off and yeah, had the cesarean.
How did that go?
It was not very pleasant. I was struggling a bit, I think, with the shock. I just remember just uncontrollably shaking the whole time, which I think is really common as well. I think I found the first bit easier, like actually up until the point where he was born was the easy part. And then after he was born, I felt like was the slow part. That was when it got really difficult. They kind of took him off to get his measurements and stuff. And at that point, I kind of felt like I was on my own. Like my husband went over with him, which I wanted him to do. And I couldn't see anybody in my line of sight. You know, before that, there was nurses all around and people in my ear. And then after that, I just kind of felt really alone.
When you were in the operating theatre, I was just reading that you said during the cesarean that you were having a panic attack. Did that happen?
So I didn't realise at the time that that's what was happening, but now I definitely think I was. I started having chest pain.
Had you ever had a panic attack before that?
I had had one in the past, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've got a bit
of a... What did it feel like?
Well, at the time, like I said, I was really just uncontrollably shaking, and then I started getting the chest pain and I was panicking that I could feel things, that the epidural was wearing off and I could feel what they were doing. And so I was really panicking about that, and then the chest pain, and they kind of just kept brushing me off. They were like, your obs are fine, your obs are fine. But it kind of didn't take away that reality that I was having this chest pain and it felt real to me. So yeah, looking back, I'm pretty sure it was a panic attack. And it was, like I said, the first part I was handling okay. And then afterwards is when I started really struggling. Mm. And it was hard because, you know, that's the part where you want to be excited. Your baby's born, they're putting it on your chest. But the whole time I was just like struggling so bad. I just wanted somebody else to take the baby. And the chest pain lasted the whole operation. And then just started easing off once I got to recovery. So I'm not really sure what that was, if it was the panic attack causing it or, yeah.
Really stay with you in recovery?
He did, yeah. Yeah, it was all really good. He was really healthy. So as soon as he was born, they kind of put him on me and then they took him off to do his measurements and stuff. And then we stayed together the whole time in recovery. So, yeah, as far as cesareans go, it went off without a hitch and he was healthy and I was healthy. So it was a successful cesarean. But, yeah, I just really struggled with it after the epidural wore off. I was in heaps and heaps of pain. We just couldn't get on top of it. So that was a real shock as well.
Were you offered anything for the pain?
Yeah. So basically when I got to recovery, they said, oh, let us know when the epidural starts wearing off and we'll give you some endone. But I think by the time the epidural started wearing off, we kind of missed the boat. We probably should have got onto the endone before it started wearing off. So then afterwards, when they couldn't get on top of it, I was actually given morphine, really zonked me out. Like, it was pretty awful. I think it lasted at least 24 hours, like the whole next day. I was just so out of it, dozing off like mid-sentence. Yeah, it was awful. I felt really uncomfortable being left alone with a baby as well when I was just so out of it.
And was your partner able to be there with you in the hospital?
No, so it was a public hospital. So he was sent home after we got up to the ward. And yeah, didn't come back till the next day.
Did you have anyone assisting you?
I'm sure there was midwives and stuff around helping, but it's all such a blur. I really can't remember much after I was given the morphine.
And how did breastfeeding go?
It was really tough. He actually had undiagnosed tires. Everyone was telling me he wasn't tired, but I was having really, really significant pain. My nipples were bleeding. It was, yeah, really, really tough. So I ended up actually expressing to give my nipples a break and try and get them healed. Even when we went home, we were still expressing and syringe feeding him, which was hard. Yeah, the morphine helped that either. Like those early days where you're trying to learn how to breastfeed, and I was just so still zonked out from the morphine. So I really don't think that helped either.
So what was your postpartum experience like when you came home? Did the tongue tie get diagnosed? And
the tongue tie didn't get diagnosed till about 4 months. We didn't get it revised. So I struggled with breastfeeding for a really long time. I also really struggled as well the whole time I was in labor and having the baby. My grandpa, my mum's dad, was dying. So she wasn't really around very much while I was in hospital in those early days. He actually passed away the day after I got home. So I was dealing with the grief of that on top of everything else as well. So it was just a really tough, I don't really know what I was feeling, what was sort of because of the grief and what was because of, you know, the caesar and the nipple pain and, you know, normal baby blues and that kind of stuff as well. So yeah, it was a really tough postpartum period.
When did you sort of feel, I guess, mentally well? Did that come eventually, like as baby grew and you bonded more?
Yeah. And I think eventually, you know, mum started being around a bit more as well, and just it does get easier. I think probably around 12 weeks, I would say, things started getting easier, especially mentally as well. The first 6 weeks, of course, are really hard, especially after a caesar. You can't drive, you're kind of stuck at home. We had the baby in January, which is our busiest time with the food truck, which was just, yeah, we didn't really plan that well at all. So my husband was working heaps as well.
How did you find your bond with Billy?
That was actually really strong. I bonded with him straight away. That was probably one of the things that made it easier. I didn't struggle with that.
That's good. So when you were discharged from the hospital, did they give you any recommendations for future pregnancies? Did they talk to you about what had happened in your birth?
Yeah, so I didn't really get to debrief about my birth. We didn't really talk about that. I do remember the surgeon saying that I'd be fine to go for a VBAC in future. And I remember them just saying, you know, just to wait the 18 months.
And did you have in your mind that you wanted to try for a VBAC before falling pregnant with your daughter?
I did, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I didn't want to go through another caesar. Sorry, I'm just feeding her.
That's okay.
Jess, what was the main reason you didn't want to go through another cesarean?
I think the main reason was the actual procedure itself, how much I struggled with it. But also, obviously, having a toddler at home, I knew it would be really tough with the recovery, not being able to lift him, not being able to drive.
And then, so did you want to take us to how you came to fall pregnant with Harper and how that pregnancy was?
Yeah, so before we got pregnant with her, I joined the VBAC support page on Facebook and just started reading lots and lots of stories from women that were going for VBACs and had VBACs, and just started really educating myself because I sort of always wondered about my first birth, what I could have done differently, if I could have done anything with my blood pressure. You know, maybe I didn't have a choice at all. I just had so many questions. And then after we fell pregnant with her, I actually started looking into doulas to help support me.
What gave you that idea to have an additional support person? What was the reason?
It was just coming to the realization that you don't have to go along with everything the doctors say. I never knew that before. I kind of thought, you know, whatever they say goes, you know, you've just got to go along with it. So from being on this Facebook page, I started to realize that, you know, you're the boss. You get to choose what happens. And I just really wanted somebody that could support me in that and help me with making those decisions and knowing when I could sort of push back a little bit, when I had other options, just to sort of help me in that regard. And also to help me work through some of the questions that I had about my previous birth and working through some of those fears and concerns as well.
What were some of your fears coming from the first birth?
Obviously, I think everything started with the induction, but I've always wondered whether having the epidural so early halted my progress as well, that I couldn't be up and about and using gravity and all that sort of stuff too. So yeah, we just talked about induction. We talked about when it can work and when it's likely not to work. Epidurals, because I was just so scared that I wouldn't be able to cope with the pain in labour and that I would want another epidural and then we'd be back down the same road. So she really helped me talking about epidurals, how there is a time and a place for them, and yeah, just lots of stuff about that.
With the blood pressure, Jess, did you find any information about whether any of that blood pressure stuff could have been prevented?
I didn't know. I've read stories about women that had the high blood pressure early on in pregnancy, when obviously it wouldn't be appropriate to induce and they were able to manage it with medication. So it kind of got me thinking, if I was to end up with high blood pressure again, I would have had that conversation with the OBs about whether I could go on medication to try and manage it and avoid, you know, well, it wouldn't have been an induction this time. It would have been straight to Caesar. But yeah, I would have definitely asked more questions.
This time around, you chose a different care provider, a different model of care?
I did, yeah. I knew straight away after my last birth, after spending all those days in the four-bed room and my husband being rushed out, I definitely knew that I wanted to go private this time around. So there's a couple of private hospitals here in Geelong. I just did a bit of research, spoke to some friends that had given birth recently and met with a couple of different obstetricians and talked about my birth preferences.
What was the preference for private over public this time?
The main reason was for my husband to be able to stay, and also having the continuity of care, just the comfort as well afterwards. I wanted to be comfortable to stay as long as I needed to. Like last time after my cesarean, I just was busting to get out of there. I couldn't get out of there fast enough, whereas in reality I probably should have stayed a bit longer. My breastfeeding wasn't well established. So this time I wanted to make sure I was really comfortable and happy and could just stay in hospital for as long as I needed to and really make sure we were right before we got home. So yeah, we chose private hospital. They had a team of four obstetricians. Instead of just seeing one, you see all four throughout your pregnancy. And then yeah, they're on like a roster system. So whoever you actually get for your birth, you've got to know them throughout the pregnancy. There's no chance, you know, if one of them's off sick and you've got someone that you don't know. So I kind of liked that as well, that you've got backups.
And how were they towards your desire to VBAC? Were they all supportive?
They were all supportive. Out of the four, there was two that I really gelled with the most and seemed the most supportive. But I was always reassured at every appointment that they're all on the same page. You know, if one of them agrees to something, then they're all on that same page. So I wasn't concerned about that. I took my birth preferences in and we spoke about that and, you know, they were all on board. So yeah, I was happy.
And did they have policies around VBAC, like water birth or a continuous fetal monitoring, things like that?
Yeah. So I really wanted a water birth, but the hospital I ended up choosing don't have baths. So that was sort of taken out of the equation, but the other private hospital that do have baths wouldn't have let me in it anyway, being a VBAC. So it kind of didn't really play into it very much. The other policy was the continuous monitoring and the cannula. They want a cannula in straight away, which I was okay with because I know I'm really hard to cannulate. So I thought if it did come to an emergency and they're stuffing around trying to find a vein, I just felt comfortable knowing that that was going in straight away. I said I would prefer intermittent monitoring, but that was just one of those points that they wouldn't negotiate on. But they had wireless monitors, so I was kind of happy with that I'd still be able to move around and hop in the shower. So yeah, that was okay. It wasn't one of my huge sticking points anyway. As long as it was wireless, I was happy.
Was there anything you knew 100% that you didn't want to happen this time around from your first experience?
Yeah, so I definitely didn't want to be induced again. I had such a bad experience with it last time. I was just so of the belief that if my body's not ready, it's not going to happen. But it was their policy anyway, being a VBAC, that they wouldn't induce. They would just go straight to Caesar. So that was kind of, you know, I was happy with that. I also definitely did not want an epidural. I had that in my birth plan, that if I was asking for one to try and distract me, and, you know, I really was just so scared that it would stall my labour. They were the only real things. The other policy they had, well, it wasn't really a policy, but they would have preferred me not to go over 41 weeks. And I said I didn't want to have any interventions before 42 weeks, and they agreed to that. So I was really happy with that.
In terms of things that you did differently in this pregnancy, so you had your doula. Was there anything else that you were doing to try and ensure this would go differently?
Yeah, I did pretty much everything, all the wives' tales, everything. I saw a chiro and an osteo, especially towards the end of my pregnancy. I was seeing them every week. My pelvis was quite tight, so they really worked on getting that loosened up. I felt, actually after my chiro appointments, I could physically feel the baby dropping lower.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing. So there was chiro, osteo. I saw an acupuncturist from about 36 weeks. I was taking raspberry leaf capsules. Towards the end, I was having the clary sage in the diffuser and getting my husband to do the acupressure massages. Pretty much tried everything. Doula, hypnobirthing.
Did you do a birth preparation course in your first pregnancy?
Yeah, I did the one that is offered by the hospital, which, looking back, I've just gained so much more from the hypnobirthing course. Like, I would recommend to anybody just to skip the hospital one and do a hypnobirthing course, because I just learned so much more. Like, I learned everything that we learned in the hospital one, plus so many more coping techniques and just heaps more.
How did you feel about uterine rupture? Did you feel a little bit at ease about it because of the monitoring and that sort of thing? Or, like, what was your mindset like?
I wasn't really. I think I'd done enough research to know that the chances were super slim, so I wasn't really concerned about it. The only thought I really gave it was I probably would have liked to have a home birth, but that was just the one thing I thought, if I do rupture, then I want to be in a hospital. But that was pretty much the extent of the thought that I gave it. It just wasn't really on my mind at all.
Jess, before we get into the birth story, go a little bit further, I'm actually quite curious, because I know you obviously gave birth really recently. So COVID occurred at some point throughout your pregnancy.
Yeah.
Did you have your doula booked in prior to the emergence of coronavirus and COVID-19?
Tell us about that. Kind of lucky. I had booked my doula in and met up with her before COVID, which was good that I actually got to meet her in person before all of that happened. Yeah, we'd had that one meeting in person, booked her in, and then COVID happened. So all of our catch-ups that we would have had throughout my pregnancy had to occur over FaceTime. Which was, I mean, it was still really good, but obviously not ideal. I still got a lot out of it. Like I said, we got to discuss all of my past issues and working through everything. And I still felt like I got to know her really well. But yeah, it was really disappointing. She wasn't allowed to come to the hospital, which was hard. I know a lot of her clients that she had booked in actually pulled out because of that. But I really feel like the value in her I got in the lead up to my birth. I feel like by the time I got to the hospital, I was okay. I didn't need her so much then, but it was that lead up and labor that I really needed her. It was hard too, because obviously we were all in isolation, so I couldn't have my mum here supporting me. She pretty much missed the whole last trimester of my pregnancy, which was really hard. All my appointments I had to go to by myself. My husband wasn't allowed into the scans.
And how did that feel, Jess, sort of being alone at those times? Did you have the confidence, I suppose, because it's your second time around?
Yeah.
You sort of know what's going on in a way, but did it feel isolating or?
Yeah, it was disappointing. I definitely feel for first-time mums, it would just be so much harder for them. I really think being the second time around, I handled it better. And even if he was allowed to come in, he wouldn't have been able to anyway, because we didn't have anybody else to have our toddler. So
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of hard. There was one other thing with the COVID that I think was one of the harder parts of my pregnancy. I think I was about 35 weeks and I got a really bad cough and I couldn't go to see a doctor or anything because obviously it was a COVID symptom, but it was when they wouldn't test you if you hadn't been in contact with someone that had it. Yeah. So the doctors wouldn't see me, but I also couldn't get tested. And I just felt so anxious being so heavily pregnant and being sick, but not being able to see a doctor. And then I couldn't go to my appointments because I had a COVID symptom. And it was just such a horrible, anxious time. That was the worst part, I think, of being pregnant during COVID.
So Jess, you made it to 41 weeks with Harper. Can you tell us what happened then?
Yeah, so I went in for my 41-week appointment and I kind of knew at that point that there might be some difficult conversations because I knew that they didn't want me going over that. So I got in there and straight away she was trying to book me in. She said, you know, we've got these options and my preferred option is to get you in for a Caesar. So I stuck to my guns and I said I wanted to wait to 42 weeks, which was hard. I'm not really a confrontational person, so it was really hard for me to stand up to the obstetrician and say, no, I'm going to wait. And she was fine.
Why were they suggesting a Caesar?
Just because it was against their policy to induce for a VBAC because of the pressure that it puts on the uterine scar. So, yeah, I always knew that if it got to the point that it would be a Caesar, not an induction. And I spoke to her about instead of having a full-blown induction, maybe just putting in the balloon and seeing what would happen. But she said if your cervix is still that unfavourable, it's unlikely to do anything anyway, which I knew from my first birth as well.
Was Harper posterior at 41 weeks?
She was, yeah. So she hadn't been the whole pregnancy. She'd been in the perfect position. And then 41 weeks, I found out she was posterior, which was really shattering.
Oh, so what did you do then? Were you onto spinning babies?
And... I was, yeah. So her head was also tilted back, which I think was more of a problem.
All right.
Which that was why the obstetrician thought that I wasn't, my cervix was so unfavourable because the head was tilted back. She wasn't able to move down and put that pressure on the cervix. So disappointed after that appointment. I was crying. I was just like really lost hope. And it just so happened I had an appointment with my chiro that afternoon and she just really filled me with positivity again. She had all home births with her kids and they were all posterior. They all turned during labour. And she just really filled me up with positivity again that I could still do this and there was still plenty of time. So, yeah, she basically sent me home. She said, don't do any lounging back. Even when you're sitting there having dinner, make sure you're tilted forward on your chair. Spend lots of time on your hands and knees. I messaged my osteo and she confirmed all of that and told me to look up the spinning babies techniques. So, yeah, basically the whole of the next day, I pretty much spent on my hands and knees with my toddler climbing on my back. And, yeah, I was exhausted. By the end of the day, I was so tired. All I wanted to do was just relax on the couch. But, yeah, I kept tilting forward and sitting on the football and doing all that stuff. I did a inversion off the Spinning Babies Techniques website. It felt really uncomfortable. I didn't like it. I felt like it didn't achieve anything. But I don't know, maybe it did. I felt that night like my skin had got tighter again, so I sort of felt like maybe the baby had turned around, but I wasn't sure. So yeah, that night we did a clary sage massage on all the acupressure points and watched a movie and relaxed and went to bed and did that other wives' tale.
About having sex to bring on labour.
Yeah. Trying everything at that point.
Did you go into labour after this Clary Sage massage and sexy times? And it all just sounds so nice.
So, that night, about midnight, I started feeling tightenings. But I'd had the same thing happen a couple of weeks previous and they didn't eventuate into anything. I had them all night and nothing happened. So I kind of didn't get my hopes up. I thought that might have just been happening again. I might have just sort of irritated it a bit. So I didn't wake up my husband. I didn't get much sleep. They were sort of coming pretty regularly. It wasn't painful. It was just that tightening kind of feeling. And then I think about 7 a.m. they started really ramping up. And I told my husband, you know, I think this is it. My mum was actually already coming down because I was meant to be having every second day. I was supposed to be going into the hospital for an obstetrician appointment and to have monitoring. And at that point, I didn't want to go by myself anymore. I needed the support of my husband. So, yeah, mum was actually coming down anyway. So I messaged her and said, oh, I think you better chuck a bag in just in case. Yeah, it all kind of kicked off.
There's just a beautiful photo here of your husband supporting you during labour. It looks like you've got the TENS machine on and you're still labouring at home.
Yeah.
How important was his support during that process, during the VBAC process?
So important, I think, to have that feeling of the love and the support of him. You know, I had my doula there as well, but it's just not the same as having that person that you know loves you and cares about you. And it was really important. I had I think you can see it in the photo. We had the Rebozo around his shoulders. So he really cocked it. I was really pulling quite hard on the Rebozo. around his shoulders. I wanted to labor at home. I basically wanted to rock up to the hospital being 10 centimeters dilated, ready to push. Like I wanted to stay at home for as long as I could. My doula came over about 11 a.m. and that was really good. She kind of just added that extra level of support and had those ideas of coping strategies and what we should try and reminded me to try and eat, even though I couldn't really stomach anything. So, yeah, she was a good support as well. And I made it to about 3 p.m. before we went to the hospital. So I was really glad. I think the main thing for me was even if it did end another C-section, I really wanted to know what it felt like to go into labour and be able to labour at home like that. So I was really, really pleased that, yeah, I at least got that far.
And how did your contractions feel this time compared to your induction?
They felt, obviously I had that time that they built up. They didn't just come on straight away hard and fast. They'd been gradually building over the night, morning. So I had time to prepare for them. And I was able to obviously labour for a lot longer before I felt like I needed more pain relief. So that was good. But towards the end, I felt like they were getting to the same intensity as when I was induced. And I was getting not much break in between them as well, which was similar to when I was induced. But yeah, definitely they felt a lot more natural.
Yeah. And is that sort of the point where you decided it's time to go to hospital when you felt that intensity really pick up?
So my doula, I could tell that she thought I could stay home longer, that obviously I wasn't about to have the baby, but I just knew that I'd got to that point where I wasn't coping at home anymore and I needed that extra level of support and pain relief as well. I remember saying to my husband in the car, like the car ride was just hell, it was just awful. And I remember saying to him in the car, like, as soon as we get into the room, you have to make them give me the gas straight away. Like, as soon as we get there, I want the gas. So, yeah, that was sort of the point. It was a lot harder than I thought. I'd watched so many videos, like hypnobirthing videos, where the women just seem so calm, like they're not even feeling the contractions. And, yeah, it wasn't like that for me.
When you got to hospital and you could access that pain relief, what did you go for first? The gas?
The gas, yeah. So it was actually good. My doula decided to come with us to the hospital just to try her luck, because at that point the restrictions had eased and there was a couple of hospitals starting to allow doulas in. So she said, oh, I'll just come, I'll give it a go. So she actually made it to the birth suite with us. She walked up with us, made it into the birth suite, and then they kicked her out. So she almost made it. I thought we got past the security guard. I was like, oh, this is good. But yeah.
How did that make you feel? I guess at some point you sort of knew your luck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It didn't throw you off or anything.
No, I knew she'd probably be sent home. And like I said, I felt like I got what I needed. I needed her at home with me. And then when I got to the hospital, I felt like I was okay. I think she managed to get the blinds drawn and my salt lamp set up, and then they kicked her out. So, yeah.
Did you know which obstetrician was going to be on duty? Is it just sort of luck when you got there out of the four that you would see during your pregnancy?
Yeah, so I wasn't sure. They've got their set days that they see that you go in for your appointments. So I knew that my favourite one worked on Wednesdays, actually seeing patients, but I didn't know if that meant that he would be delivering babies as well on a Wednesday. So when I rang up to tell them that I was coming in, or that to tell them that I was in labour, I asked who was on and they said it was him, my favourite one. And my doula said, she was watching me on the phone, and she said, like, the moment that you realised that your favourite one was on duty, it was like your body was like, right, we can do this. And it just went to the next level. So that was, yeah, it was amazing. I was so happy. I just felt like everything was going right. You know, my first labour, I felt everything was going wrong and I just knew it was going to end in a Caesar. But this time it just felt like everything was right. Everything was falling into place. I went into labour on the day that my favourite obstetrician was on. It was just all going really well.
So tell us now about your labour in hospital and in the birth suite. What was that like?
Yeah, so after we got there, the obstetrician came in and asked if he could do an exam, which I agreed to, and found out I was only 3 centimetres, which was a bit of a shock because I just felt like my contractions were so intense and coming on so fast. I thought I'd be a bit further along than that. But he was really, really positive. He was certain that, you know, I was going to get my V back and the show was on the road. But I was just struggling so much with the contractions. I could feel my body was just so tense and tight and I couldn't relax. So I ended up asking for an epidural, even though I was so dead against it. And I spoke to the obstetrician and I told him my concerns about it stalling my labour. And he was just so confident that that wouldn't happen and that it was happening and I was going to give birth that night. So decided to have the epidural. It made such a huge difference. I was just so relaxed. I could actually just calm down, catch my breath, get a rest. It was a self-dosing epidural, so I could choose when to push the button because I wanted it to start easing off by the time it was time to push so that I could feel a bit more and feel the contractions as well. So I only actually pushed it once and that was enough. I could still feel the contractions, but yeah, it was enough for me to relax. He actually came back 2 hours later and did another exam and I was 8 centimetres, which I was so shocked. I was just so stoked that I'd progressed that fast, and he broke my waters and there was meconium in the waters. The midwife was awesome with helping me move around. I told her that I wanted to move as much as possible, even though I'd had the epidural. She dropped the foot of the bed, so my legs were hanging over the edge of the bed and I was sitting up. Move me from side to side with the peanut ball. As far as epidurals go, it was really good.
Wow, that's amazing. And so did you feel like you could feel sensations, but you didn't feel any pain?
Yeah. And then when they told me I was 8 centimetres, it was just such a huge relief because I never got past 4 centimetres with my first birth. So it just really reassured me that I hadn't ruined my chances by having the epidural, that it was, things were still progressing. And the fact that it had only been 2 hours and I'd progressed that much, I was really happy. So when he came and broke my waters and I was 8 centimetres, he said, I'll come back in 2 hours and we'll have this baby. So over the next couple of hours, the baby's heart rate started to get a bit high and they were getting a bit concerned. So when he came back after 2 hours, he was like getting pretty anxious about getting the baby out. And at this point, I started to get a bit doubtful that it was starting to go down the emergency Caesar route. He did another exam and he said I was 10 centimetres. So I was stoked. I was just so happy. And he said, but, you know, we really need to get the baby out now, you know, with the meconium and the heart rate. I could tell he was getting a bit concerned. And he said the baby was still a little bit turned to the side. So he wanted to use forceps to turn her. And at that point he said, because I'm going to use forceps, you might want to bump up your epidural. Because by that point I was back on the gas because I'd let the epidural wear off so much. Yeah, I bumped the epidural back up again, which meant it took a lot of the feeling away. So I wasn't really feeling the urge to push, but he was telling me when to push. I could still feel when I was having a contraction, so that helped. He knew I was really concerned about having an episiotomy. I had that in my birth plan. So he said he would try and do the forceps without doing an episiotomy, which he did. That was really awesome. He didn't need to do an episiotomy. and I didn't tear with the forceps. He literally just put them in, turned her a tiny bit, and then took them back out again. And then I was able to push her out myself over, I think it was 2 or 3 contractions, and then she was out.
How did you feel?
Just amazing. I just couldn't believe it that, you know, it was so easy. Like, I know I had the epidural, but...
Did you? You obviously didn't feel the ring of fire that's sometimes spoken about.
No, I didn't. The obstetrician passed her straight to me and put her on my chest, and it was just amazing, just so amazing. I was just on cloud 9. I couldn't believe that I'd done it. Got my V back. I just couldn't believe it. And we didn't know we were having a girl either. I was so sure that we were having a boy. So that was a surprise. I had to check like 3 times to be sure.
Oh,
she was pretty mucousy. They had to do some suction. The pediatrician was there already because of those little, the heart rate and the meconium. So he was there and wanted to take her off to do the suction straight away. And I really wanted delayed cord clamping. So I asked if he could do the suction while she was on my chest. And he was a bit unsure. He said, oh, I've never done that before. But he went and grabbed the tube and managed to make it reach all the way over. So that was really good. They didn't have to cut the cord. And he just did a bit of suction and that was it. I was really happy with that. I had a bit of tearing. So I had to get a couple of stitches. So we just had skin to skin the whole time while I was getting the stitches and the delayed cord clamping. It was all really calm. We were joking around and, yeah, amazing.
Yeah. And how did your placenta come out? Was that all straightforward as well?
Yeah. So I had a managed third stage. So I had the needle and a little bit of traction. But, yeah, it all came out. No worries. No issues there. I always regretted. I never got to see my placenta the first time. So I got to actually see it this time, which was really cool.
How did your feeding journey go with her?
So she wasn't very interested. Found it really hard to latch her. She didn't latch very well at all. She ended up being tongue-tied as well. Tricky start to breastfeeding.
Were they able to pick that up a little sooner than they did with Billy?
Yeah, so actually this time I kind of knew myself already, but the pediatrician came to check over her when we were being discharged and she picked up on it as well. So
how did it feel after this birth experience compared to after your cesarean?
It's just chalk and cheese, just can't compare. I mean, obviously I was going through a lot of other stuff as well after the birth of Billy with the grief, but this time I just couldn't believe it. After, even just after I'd birthed her, we were sort of on the phone with my family and it just felt like a dream. It was just amazing. Just absolutely. My whole birth plan went out the window, but I just still felt like I had the most perfect, positive, empowering experience. Just, that's, yeah, great. From the stitches, I was sore for a couple of weeks.
How was your recovery, yeah, in terms of everything going on down there? We've had some VBAC ladies say to us, oh, no one warned me about the stitches and the pain. Some people seem to experience the pain down there in a different way to others. How is that for you?
I was actually really, really scared about getting stitches. It was in my birth plan. You know, I was so scared of stitches, of tearing, of episiotomy, of, you know, having the needle down there to numb the area before the stitches. It was just one of those things that I was really scared of throughout my whole pregnancy, and then obviously the recovery afterwards as well. I remember the obstetrician saying that I'd be sore for a couple of days, and it was a lot more than that. And then I started getting nervous that something was wrong because it had been more than a couple of days, but I think that was just a typical male, you know. It was never going to be a couple of days.
No, I don't think like, so either.
You have no idea. You haven't been through this before, no. Have you? What did you do? Did someone sort of look at your stitches afterwards and check that everything was okay, or did you use anything?
I was using the like ice packs nonstop. I would have been driving the midwives nuts in the hospital, just buzzing them all the time for more ice packs. It was so much relief. And yeah, I just kept that up when I came home. I think it's hard because obviously you spend so much time sitting down feeding, but it hurts to sit, so that makes it tricky. And because of her tongue tie and latch issues, I couldn't lie down to feed her. I really had to kind of sit and focus on latching her properly. But as long as I kept up with the ice packs, I was fine. And I had the painkillers as well. They sent me home with Voltaren and I kind of kept up with that too. But still, like, the recovery was so much better than a C-section recovery.
What degree tears did you have? Do you know, Jess? Like, was it
second? think it was second.
Was Harper posterior during your labor? Like, do you think she might have turned if she wasn't posterior then, I guess?
I think she did turn. I think the day before when I was doing all of the spinning babies techniques, I think she did turn because I didn't feel like I was having a posterior labor. I didn't have any of that back pain. It was just at the very end when the obstetrician said she was just still a tiny bit tilted to the side. So I don't think she had fully rotated, but yeah, I don't think she was posterior.
And how was your, I guess in general, your whole postpartum period? Did you go into stage 3 lockdown after Harper was born?
Yeah. So I think we had a couple of weeks where we were out of the lockdown, but we still were really careful. My mum's got some health issues. We wanted to make sure that she still felt safe coming to help us. Having the toddler, I really needed the help, especially my husband with the food truck. He works night times, which is just such a hard time when you've got a newborn that wants to be cluster feeding and you've got a toddler that you need to feed and bath and get to bed. So I really needed my mum's help, but we needed to make sure that she felt safe coming. So we didn't want to be having heaps of visitors coming and going and putting us at risk. So we still kind of just acted like we were still in lockdown.
Yeah, I definitely remember that period where you're cluster feeding the second and it can start from sort of 4 o'clock that afternoon or 3 o'clock, and it's right in the period where your toddler needs their food prepared and all of that stuff. And to do that, to physically breastfeed, to physically cluster feed and do that at the same time is quite difficult.
Definitely. She was really refluxy in that first 6 weeks and she just wouldn't be put down at all. It was just so hard. And my toddler, he's just at that really cheeky stage. He knows when I'm breastfeeding and he comes up and he's put something in his mouth that he shouldn't, and he's just really like antagonistic. He just knows. It's a challenge.
How is he with Harper?
He loves her. He's just blown me away. Just amazing. I missed him so much when I was in hospital. It just killed me. But he handled it so well. I think I missed him more than he missed me. And he was napping when I got home and I decided to go and get him up from his nap, and I was going to just kind of hang out with him for a bit before we introduced him to the baby. But as soon as he saw me, he was asking where she was and wanted to meet her, and he was just so beautiful. It was amazing. He's blown me away.
Yeah. Actually, that just reminded me, you talked about the hospital. Did you feel like, was there any pressure to be discharged quickly or anything in the private hospital with COVID as well? Or was it just like, you know, you can leave whenever you're ready?
I think being in Geelong helped. Things didn't get as bad here as they did in Melbourne. And also we were in that period where the restrictions were easing anyway. So it didn't really feel, I know before that when we were in stage 3, all the hospital staff were wearing the PPE gear and it was quite full on, but we were just lucky that we were in that little window where things were getting a bit better. So yeah, none of the midwives or anything were wearing PPE. It just felt really normal when we were inside the hospital. It felt completely normal. The only thing was, they encouraged my husband not to be coming and going too much. He was allowed to stay the whole time, which was just amazing, having that full-time support there. But yeah, that was the only sort of restriction, and obviously not being able to have my son come in to visit was really hard. But I think we stayed in for 3 nights and I felt ready to leave after that. So,
Jess, do you have any advice for other women that have to birth at this time or during lockdown, either through the pregnancy or the birthing period or postpartum? Do you have any advice about that?
Yeah, I would say if you are considering a doula, to not discount it just because they can't come in for the birth, because like I said, we really got so much out of having her in the lead up to my birth and being at home with us to labour. They're still allowed to come to your home to help you labour. So that was definitely so beneficial. There's no way I could have labored at home for as long as I did without her. So that's one thing if you are considering, definitely don't brush it off. Another thing, I think if you are worried about your older kids, leaving them, that was one thing I was really concerned about, leaving my little boy, but he was so fine. Like, I just feel like he didn't even miss me. I was just out of sight, out of mind. He was having fun with my mum. So yeah, that's another thing. And I've heard a lot of other women say the same thing, that it was better than they thought. And it was actually, I think, having that time, me and my husband in the hospital, just the two of us with the baby, was really good. and then coming home and not having a barrage of visitors. You just had your little bubble. And yeah, that was really beautiful as well. I guess just instead of dwelling on all the negatives that come with the virus, to try and look at the positives, that there have been a few little positive things as well. Try and dwell on those things instead of the restrictions.
Yeah, that's a really good message, and a lovely message to have at a time where a lot of those things are uncertain and unknown.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to hear.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jess. I think that's, yeah, really reassuring, your story and your perspective as well. Thank you so much for contacting us to share your story. We really, really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this VBAC story. If you like the show, please subscribe and feel free to leave a review. If you would like to connect with us on social media, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for VBAC Birth Stories. If you have a question or you'd like to express interest in sharing your personal story, email us at vbacbirthstories@gmail.com. VBAC Birth Stories is a podcast where we share women's lived experiences. Please be advised that it's not intended to replace medical advice. If you have any concerns at all during your pregnancy, please always speak to your healthcare provider.